Leon has picked the title Building Bridges with Randy, Agronomy, Entomology, and Their Interactions.
Well, I don't know if you read these novels where they have in the opening chapter sort of the characters in the book. So they, as part of what I decided to do with this first slide, which was to let you see some of the people I'll talk about so you can see. I made my own hats, Dave. I don't know if you still have that hat I gave you from my project when you came out, but that's the insect ecology hat. And then at the bottom slide is Wayne Bailey and my wife, Phyllis Sigley. Phyllis was in grad school this same time. Actually, we got married the summer I started graduate school. And is actually at the very end of the talk, I have the one slide, the only slide I could find that I have of Randy relates to right after Phyllis and I got married. What I wanted to do, or what I'm going to do, is talk to you about, really try to talk to you about the influence that I think Randy's had. So a lot of what I put together has to do with influence of Randy sort of on my career and areas where I saw that Randy had an influence in the science. But it's a really good segue, Dave, with the last slide, because for me, everything I would always focus about thinking about what Randy accomplished was the focus on agronomy and forcing us to look at what we were doing as economic entomologists in a completely different way. And my background's a little bit different than Dave's. I mean, it's funny, looking at this picture of Randy, I could never get used to, it's kind of like the two Elvises, the early Elvis and the old Elvis. Now, I always liked the early Randy. I first met Randy with the beard, so Randy with the beard is the guy I know. I never, for the last 20 years, the new Randy with the shaven. Dave, thank God you shaved that beard off, man. In your case, I can't go with the original version. It's the new one that works. Randy was the other way around. From the time I got to the project, I started to say I was a little bit different. That first summer, I worked on the project doing whatever scut work the other hourly students did. I was amazed I got onto grad school in the first place, let alone anything else. And besides picking the leaf, punching the holes and doing that stuff, we had the carrying water out to the velvet leaf, which were dying. And so I remember that job. And then I worked my way up in Randy's estimation so that by the end of the summer, I was so esteemed that he let me help him take plant measurements in the field, which meant that I had to measure leaf areas under the canopy, leaf by leaf, count nodes, and boy, that was some honor that I had there, Dave, because it was a chance for me, really, from the way I started grad school, you know, all of the stuff that Randy was doing, and that approach to research, the emphasis was really indoctrinated in me from the get-go. And I think it's literally true. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for Randy, because although Larry gave me a job, I didn't have a major advisor. And I know there was some time after that, the end of that summer, Larry had what, like 6 or 7 students, Dave? He didn't want any more grad students. And I know that Randy and Funderburk and Dave, and I think Ken Ostley, were at a meeting with Larry, and they twisted Larry's arm to take me on as a student. And I think it was, well, he seems like a good risk. I think that I have been forever tainted as the walk-on student. And that was always my designation. And so, you know, I guess you live with it. So why don't I have a picture of Phyllis on a tractor? If I want to show Randy's influence, let me really do that. I always thought, you know, Dave is so much more elegant than I am, and he'll talk about how Randy helped him learn how to farm and do those things. Very same deal with me. Very same. And Dave, I'd always hit that wheel brake, so it was the start of my rose. I'd swing that planter around too hard so that when I started, there was that curve. And he'd yell at me for that curve in my rose. But he taught me how to do it. So one day, Phyllis, when she was working with her advisor, didn't have her seed bed ready. And he said, well, you should have got that ready with no expectation she'd do it. So we went out and I said, they taught me how to use a tractor. I can teach you how to use the tractor. And so there she is. And I think Phyllis says that this is her proudest day in graduate school, preparing the seed bed. So the next morning when they went to plant, she was able to surprise Tashi, her major advisor, who who was shocked to see her seedbed was actually ready. The other thing I have to say about seedbeds in Randy, and I almost put in a picture I have of soil erosion in Iowa, is he got a log or part of a log cabin or something that he chained behind a tractor. If there was any clod size larger than like a centimeter, it offended him somehow. And I just remember him driving back and forth over the reactor bottoms with that, so that he had the most perfect seedbed I'd ever seen in my life. And when I started doing stuff at Nebraska and I had gaps in my rows and stuff, it's nothing I could ever have admitted to Randy. Now, the other thing I learned from Randy, and I was actually able to use in my PhD research, which is what's going on here, and that is the ability to torture large groups of people. Randy set himself up with looking at keeping velvet leaf seedlings alive and so forth. I did work on seed corn maggot injury, and so there we are, I guess I'm taking the picture, so maybe I'm not among them, but crawling on our hands and knees, clipping the terminal of soybean plants so the axillary buds would grow, which was characteristic of seed corn maggot injury. And it's cooler, but my God, even at the time, it hurt. I remember not being able to stand up straight for days afterwards. But I don't know, the whole idea of doing experiments where if you made a big investment in this experiment at the outset, you should try to wring every bit of data out of it. And that was a theme that Randy's work illustrated, and it was sort of the theme that we had, that once you have those large experiments, and Dave, I did have a strip plot factorial treatment arrangement with splits. So, I learned those lessons that once you make that investment, there are things you can do. And I thought Randy had a real facility for, it sounds complicated, but really efficient experimental design. The other thing that I think this is a picture of Ken Osley's rear, and how much I wish Ken were here to see his rear, but sampling potato leaf hoppers. Ken and Randy had been doing a potato leaf hopper study with Clark, glabrous, and pubescent isolines. And if you don't have leaf hairs on soybean, potato leaf hoppers absolutely destroy them, as you can see in the lower slide. And within that first year when I was on the project, those two guys decided I should be helping them for reasons I don't to this day understand. And I will never forget my first scientific meeting, because they decided not only should I help them, but I should present the research I knew almost nothing about. And it was North Central Branch meeting, and I had my talk prepared for 12 minutes, and Randy and Ken had rehearsed me on my talk, and I'm all set for 12 minutes. And this guy, Ron Hammond, who I didn't know, was chairing the session, and I will never forget Ron's words. I was the first speaker. Well, as you know, they're 12-minute papers, so I will be ringing the bell at 10, and at 11, you will be off the stage. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do with that extra minute? Where's it going to come from? And I just watched Ken and Randy smile at my discomfort. So the reason I picked this title is because, as another example of Randy's generosity, in 1986, Randy had been invited to give a talk at the University of Missouri. And Randy called me, this is still why I was a PhD student, and said, "Oh, Higley, we should go do that talk together, and we'll talk about entomology and agronomy, and you're getting you're doing your double major, and I did, and this will be great." And so Randy came up with this title, Bridging the Gap, Entomology and Agronomy. Now, I don't necessarily see any of you from the University of Missouri, but I can tell you that talk has to be legendary at the University of Missouri. Certainly it's legendary in my career. And I kept thinking about how can I best illustrate, just giving a talk. And so I tried to think of an insect that carried its frass on its back to try to indicate just how bad that talk was. It wasn't I'm falling asleep in the audience bad. It achieved a level of frassitude, should we say, that just transcended every other talk. I had been up the night before throwing up in Wayne Bailey's bathroom. I was so sick, and I barely had any voice left. Randy had got delayed, so we had something like a whopping 40 minutes to try to put this thing together. And it was hideous. But the funny thing about it is we ended up giving essentially the same talk at Kansas State and at Iowa State. And I would have to say it's one of the best received seminars that I've ever done. But I just think how many assistant professors, and I think Randy was still assistant professor at that time, would have an invitation to another university and would invite some wet behind the ears grad student and come do that with them. And the fact that it was a disaster, Randy never saw that. Oh, well, they got the information, didn't they? I said, yeah, in the worst way possible. But I guess they got the information, Randy. He never let it bother him. And, you know, I'd seen the same thing. I don't know if you remember this day, but we had those huge crews out there working, and Randy lacked the capacity to fire people. He was literally too nice. I remember one summer I worked, there was a guy who couldn't count. And I don't mean that figuratively, I mean it literally. You have to count a certain number of holes as you're punching, and he couldn't count the numbers of holes. And Randy couldn't bring himself to fire the guy, and I don't know what he had him walk the beans or do something, but that was Randy. He was incredibly generous with his ideas and incredibly generous in terms of his nature. Now, that's not to say you didn't have to get out of Randy's way. He might bowl you over as he's doing something. But I guess, you know, I see some of my graduate students out there. It's like putting gasoline on a fire where I'm concerned. So I'm looking at a guy that I want to emulate who's just going like crazy and not stopping. And so, Bob, I think that might explain part of my personality traits. I tried to think about succinct statements, if I could, about what, for me, what Randy's major contributions were. And I came up with these three. Now, I don't think I ever heard Randy say it's the plant stupid, but he might just as well have. And I'm not sure he wouldn't have said it in much that same way. From the day I got there, he was extremely critical of people who were doing studies purportedly about how insects were affecting plants and not looking at the plants. And he argued over and over again. And what was exciting at that time, and Dave mentioned it, was that you'd listen to him and you'd look at the arguments and you'd realize, well, of course, he's absolutely right. And you would start to see where there were new opportunities. And as we started reading some plant ecology papers or we started reading the physiology papers, it became obvious to us where entomologists had been going wrong and how we could have a chance at contributions in new directions. And I remember Ken and Randy told me I had to read Harper's Population Biology of Plants, and I have my cherished volume there, and there was actually a chapter on defoliation, 1976. I mean, that might be the only book written on plant science where they even acknowledge that insects do something. But Randy was really interested in drawing from other areas and looking at, Dave's right, he had this focus, I think, on identifying problems that are important for farmers, but he could draw from other disciplines. And so the outcome of that was this constant focus on physiology, and a similar focus on, and it was really showed in the work he did with velvet leaf, the work he did with velvet leaf is that it's not enough to document an interaction or to talk about it. It's about the mechanism. What really matters is why do things happen? Now I can succinctly summarize a lot of the research results from Randy's velvet leaf. And in the velvet leaf work, Randy didn't find a lot of interaction, but essentially what he found were additive responses between the effects of those weeds and the effects of defoliation. And as I'll show you in a minute, that really directly led to the whole line of research that I did. And I think it led us his observations from those studies actually sent the foundation for moving straight ahead in terms of understanding what really is the bottom line with things, not just green cloverworm, but defoliators in general. So when I talked to Dave about this, he said, "You're going to put the black box slide up?" And I mean, everybody who was had anything to do with this had one of these slides. And Dave, you'll notice I tried to pick a blue color that was almost as crappy as the blue foil slides we used, but I couldn't quite use the real color because it was too painful for me to go back there. So it's suggestive. I remember Bob Peterson one time giving a talk saying that there would come a time in his life when we would have a big bonfire with all these slides and we'd burn the black box slides and then we would know that the world had progressed. And Bob, I think we're close. I actually do believe that we're close to getting to burn the slides. But this was Randy's question. He talked about insects, not as, you know, the end result of some regression equation, but you had insects doing something to plants And then that resulted in yield loss. And what mattered was what happened in between. And the only, and the argument Randy made that the rest of us have been preaching our careers is, that's the only way to solve that problem. You have to open the box and figure out those mechanisms. And that's what Randy had tried to do with, and had started to do with his PhD work, and that's what a lot of those of us who followed had tried to do. Now, this is, believe it or not, from Iowa, Dave. So there is such a thing as defoliating, there are defoliating insects, but it's after you.
I never saw it,
still not green cloverware. It's woolly bear, not green cloverworm. But I think for those of us in the early 80s who were on Larry Pettigo's project, this was the holy grail. Figure out what happens to plants when insects chew on the leaves. And we're not interested, and actually a lot of the issues that have great currency today, we're not so much interested in defense responses and so forth. We want to know how it impacts yield. I think secondarily, I've had students who've been interested in that, not as agronomic yield, but as fitness, but that was the theme. And one of the things that I have a strong sense of regret about, and I know some of the other speakers are going to disagree with me about this, but I was really disappointed when Randy got the job at Kansas State, because I was hoping he wouldn't get an extension job, because I knew an extension job would consume him, and he would do whatever it would take to help those farmers. And damn it, he was working on corn. And I mean, we had a derisive attitude towards corn anyway. Gary, you know it's true. I mean, no matter how bad it was working in the soybeans, we could always console ourselves. God, at least we're not digging corn roots and washing corn roots. We haven't sunk to that level of despair. So when Randy got a job that had him, well, Dave's laughing because he knows it's true, that the harsh truth comes out.
Because I'm working on corn.
Well, you see, I think I'm the only guy who stayed true to the one true faith, and that is working on soybeans. And unfortunately, even I have fallen away from the church on occasion, and I did some stuff in corn. Dave, so I'm not proud of it, but it happened. So I think one of the biggest regrets I have is that shortly before Randy died, we had a conversation at the national IPM meetings, and he told me he'd be working more in soybean. And I thought, I just had that sense, the same sense I had in the 80s about, oh man, how great will this be that Randy will be working on soybeans? And I thought about, you know, things that I could do, things that Tom Hunt and I had talked about doing and trying to do stuff with Randy. And I think it's a measure of the respect I feel for Randy and the debt I owe him that when I think of all the things that Randy accomplished, it on a personal level, that's kind of the pain I carry with me, because I so wanted to work with Randy again. Well, okay, what can we say about this? Well, one thing we can say is, Dave, I did not get the ceremonial hole punch. You guys got that the year before, but I have my punch. And I would like to point out, you can still see the soybean juices right there, unwashed, just pristine, ready for the Smithsonian whenever they recognize the importance of the cork borer. And I'm really the beneficiary of the Osley stuff, because while it is true, I have tortured certain of my students by using cork borers. Mostly we went to leaf counting. And Dave, you'll be pleased to know, I recently had a request to do a revision of that consumption program I wrote for doing leaflets. So here it is, 25 years later, and people are still using those approaches that Ron Hammond and Randy and Ken developed as a way for looking at the way to quantify defoliation and look at defoliation. So doing these sorts of plots became a lot easier, and at the first part of my career, say the first 10 years of my career, that's what I did. I did not have the small army of workers, but I did have a not very happy Bob Peterson, and he, you know, Bob was working for two. And Tom, is it the same shirt you're wearing? I see it's still red.
It's stretched out a lot.
Is it? I have nothing to say there, but I always thought I was the beneficiary of all that work, because the really horrible stuff happened, and Randy did that, and we got a lot of those techniques out of that. Their 10 years of work, we kind of went forward, and so I've always kind of felt that, how do I want to put this, that I got to put some of the icing on the cake, and I wasn't really the guy who was the baker. And so Randy's PhD research had shown pretty definitively that it wasn't competition for water, and it wasn't competition through direct any sort of nutritional interference that was driving potential interactions between weeds and defoliators. And when you carry that further, and we looked at where things were going, it became pretty obvious that it had to be something about the capacity of soybeans to intercept light that was responsible for yield loss. And so it was an outgrowth of what Randy had found that directed our own research. And sure enough, we start doing studies and we see these wonderful linear relationships between how much photosynthetically active radiation is intercepted by a canopy and yield. And that's a simple matter to do the same thing and show how there's a direct relationship between the leaf area index, or the number of leaves on a canopy, and light interception. And in an essence, that opened one huge part of that black box, that the yield losses associated with defoliation are a function of how it alters the capacity of canopies to intercept light. And it makes it easy then to superimpose weeds, because weeds do the same thing, not in all circumstances. And that's a direction that would not have happened without Randy. It's just, I think it's just that straightforward. Now, the other stuff that I'll mention quickly that follows from that, of course, is asking, well, does it change efficiency? So I started doing canopy photosynthesis work, and sure enough, some of the things Randy had found with these strange patterns of regrowth or phenological delays after defoliation, which is something he reported. As I looked at photosynthesis, what we discovered was there actually is a delay in ordinary senescence. And you can measure it through, as we did here, by looking at carbon exchange rate, so that when we see different levels of defoliation, I'll just give you the extremes. If you look at the gray, that's an undefoliated plant. If you look at the red, a heavily defoliated plant, the leaves just keep photosynthesizing way past when they ordinarily would. And it was, and it's part of the mechanism that soybeans, and we now know potato and other crops, use to compensate for defoliation. Randy had been able to show the gross effects, but didn't have the instrumentation. And I remember having discussions about how can we get Pedego to let us get some photosynthesis meters, and we never were successful. Well, Randy wasn't. I was there long enough to see the start of that. The other thing then that I was able to look at is just how profound can some of that compensation be. And that actually informed some of the research that we've been doing, looking at compensatory mechanisms. It also has led to research that deals with fitness issues and a variety of other systems. Now, I don't want to talk about all this in any detail, but I want to make this point. I'm just one guy, and I can look at my career, and I can point to two major lines of research that I couldn't have done if Randy hadn't done his work. At the least that could have happened is that work would have been delayed by a decade. To me, that's a huge contribution. And it's something I owe a big debt to Randy, and I think the scientific community does. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, which is maybe more conceptual, is Randy's emphasis on stress interactions. Back in the early 90s, Phyllis and I and Joe Browdy wrote a chapter for one of the world crop science congresses. And what we did there was try to look at what was the basis for interactions between stressors. And it's a topic that we talked about constantly while we were on Larry's project. And we'd seen, and Randy had seen, all these weird effects where you impose a stressor and you suddenly see big phenological differences in soybean. This is an example of a phenological delay of maybe 2 weeks. And what I had noted in some of my PhD research was that gave rise to other sorts of interactions with certain stressors being able to come in, subsequently the potential for yield loss and so forth. And so what we had done was, what we did in that chapter and then in the course of research, was to look at places where, by understanding, not just by doing these large factorial experiments, but could we anticipate where interactions might occur? And so Randy had kind of showed this, and I think Dave's work did as well, that if you understand that the weed interactions are principally through competition for light, then you can pretty much say, well, okay, well, under what circumstances would the light environment favor weed development? We would expect there to be an interaction. And it's not the normal statistical interaction. It's an interaction where you actually increase the occurrence of a stressor. And so that was one type of interaction versus the classical situation where you have two stressors affecting a plant and then the consequence is different. And so I put a couple slides here to make the point of examples that I was that grew out of those discussions in that theory, which is on top increased incidence of brown spot in association with certain types of injury, and on the bottom being able to actually predict the occurrence of damping off disease in association with certain types of root pests. Now, I only have two slides left, and in some ways I think this slide might be the most important. When you spend a lot of time teaching, one of the realities of teaching is you never know whether you're successful. I mean, course evaluations are not don't tell you that, whether the students like you or not. If you could go out 5 years or 10 years, you might have some idea. I think one of the advantages of grad advising is you get to watch the success of your students. But let me talk to you about a single thing that Randy did. Randy helped design my PhD work, and Randy was very, really impressed upon me. You know, you've got this great system, Leon. You should use these replacement series. Well, what's a replacement series? Oh, it's a plant experiment design. You grow things in different proportions, and then you can measure competition. All right, so I start reading up, and sure enough, and it's not been applied. And so if you look at these first two references, those are from my PhD work, and that's exactly right. I was able to actually measure competition between plants that had been injured by insects and not injured. That all arose out of suggestions that Randy made about experimental design. But then Wayne Rowley and Mark Novak at Iowa State listened to my seminar and they said that we should be able to use the same thing for mosquitoes. So next thing you know, and it was an early study I did, we're measuring competition between native tree-hole mosquitoes and Aedes albopictus. I was a reviewer on a paper. I happen to know that that same technique has been used in Italy. And I'm talking to Bob Peterson. He says they have some new diseases. So that business of predicting what the competitive relationship will be will have an actual impact on management of human disease in Europe. Then I happen to be on a committee of a student who wants to look, see if he can measure fitness effects of triazine-resistant weeds. And I say, well, you know, Dan, you've got a perfect setup for doing a replacement series. We can put a number on that competition. And that happens. And about the same time, I'm talking to statisticians saying, I don't understand the variance structure of these things, and so there's another paper. In my own career, there's five papers focusing on competition that vary everything from fundamental statistics to agronomy to human health with real consequences, and none of those papers, not a single one, could ever have been written if Randy hadn't offered his guidance, his sort of selfless guidance about this is the way you should do that experiment. So here's the one picture of Randy I have. It's Halloween, first year I was in graduate school. There's a number of noteworthy things. First, I seem to remember that Stephanie won the best costume prize, Mary, and I think she came as Cinderella. Dave, you came as a potato. I really don't know what to say about that. It was a black bag with a bunch of eyes on it, I think, or brown bag with eyes on it. And Randy came, and sadly you don't see him in full costume because he had a mixing bowl that went on his head as Duct Tape Man. And Randy jumping at that apple when we were doing our crazy games, that's Andy's attitude. Randy had a real zest for research and for interacting with people. And I was kind of happy after the fact that if I only had to have one slide of Randy, this is the slide I'm glad I had, because for me it expresses a lot of about what I loved about Randy and what I miss. Thanks.